The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. What is important? The news that is important that will actually affect our lives. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I am in a very interesting place in my life. With almost everything, I am finding myself torn between what is lost and what we're about to find. What is gone, the lost opportunities, and the opportunities on the horizon. I want to talk to you about two children today. This week, Charlie Gard would have been a year old. It was a year ago this week that Connie Yates gave birth to Charlie. Proud dad, Chris Gard, gathered him up and their belongings in the hospital room in England, and the happy parents headed home with what they thought was a completely healthy, perfect baby boy. Little did they know then, 2 months later, they would be rushing him back to the hospital. It was last Friday, just a few days away from his first birthday, that the valiant effort to save their precious son ended. A 9-month struggle between the hospital and parents. A hospital and a government with its heartless socialist healthcare system that said, "We are in charge of this child, you are not." All the parents were asking for was a chance to save their baby. Just a chance. Just a chance. Isn't that, haven't we all been there? Haven't we all had something happen with our family members or our children where we have just said, "Lord, give me a chance. Give it to me. Just, is there a chance?" Not desperate negotiation. They weren't asking for anything from the hospital or the British government. They had raised well over $1 million to have Charlie enter a program here in the United States for an experimental treatment that an American doctor said would help. But they were stopped by the hospital at every turn. They were stopped and litigated at every turn. They took their baby to the hospital for treatment, and when the hospital said it's time to give up hope, all they asked was for the opportunity to have hope and go someplace else at no cost to the taxpayer or to the hospital. But the hospital could not lose this. See, this is the deal about socialism. You cannot eject yourself from it, because you will make the state look bad. The fight to save Charlie's life was drawn out so long by the hospital and by the government that by the time that it got down to it, the treatment was no longer effective. It was too late for Charlie. Now, the British authorities still think they did the right thing. They still believe that they knew what was best for the infant. He needed to die, quote, with dignity, end quote. I mean, at 11 months old, it's hard to fathom how dignity, you're crapping yourself and wetting yourself. How is dignity? Die with dignity. How about dying with the parents? How about dying at home, in the arms of your mother and father? quiet, away from the machines. The hospital wouldn't allow that to happen. The hospital took the parents back to court again in the final hours of his life and said, he's got to stay in the hospital. You can't take him home. The parents begged, okay, then can we just stay with him the entire time? That wasn't even good enough. In my opinion, the hospital was exacting a cost, teaching a lesson. How dare you question us? How dare you make our life uncomfortable? We told you from the beginning this child was ours, not yours. And now you come to us and you want to be with him? No. Set an example so no one else dares cross the state. This is a story that caught the attention of the Western world, not the Eastern world. The Eastern world doesn't care about stuff like this. The Western world does. It caught the attention of the entire West, not just because of the suffering of the baby, but the annihilation of the family. I was working on a couple things last night for the show. One of them was this, and the other was the story that broke my heart yesterday. And there were two songs that kept going through my head. And it is the same. I'm torn. I don't know if you heard yesterday's show. Yesterday's show, we introduced you to a woman named Amy. She lives in Redmond, Oregon. It's this little teeny town just outside of the National Forest. Amy has two children. They've both been taken from her. They've been taken from her because the state says that she's not smart enough. She has an IQ of 72. I don't know what I expected when I spoke to Amy, but for the state to say you're not capable of taking care of your own child, that you're just too stupid, I expected somebody that, quite honestly, did not sound like this.
It's been hard, but it's worth it to get my story out there so that people know that you can get your kids back as long as you just fight. Fight for everything you have because your kids are worth it.
Has a lawyer stepped up to help you yet, Amy?
I have a court-appointed attorney and an appeals attorney, but I would like to see if I could find someone that's out of state that can better represent me.
Why? Because all the attorneys and all of the state workers, they all live there in town, in this small little town, and they're all just making deals. She wants somebody who's neutral, somebody who will look at the facts, somebody that will look at her as a person. I felt so horrible yesterday when I interviewed her. Here's what basically I was saying. America needs to have you step up and justify your motherhood. And the moment she started to speak, when I said, tell me your story, and I heard who clearly she was, I realized all of us, and yesterday, me, I had become a voice from the past.
You must all know half a dozen people at least who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. Just put him there and say, sir or madam, Now, will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social vote, then, clearly, we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive.
Wasn't that exactly what I was saying? This is George Bernard Shaw. Oh, the famous playwright that everybody learns from progressive universities, how wonderful he was. The guy who was the first to say, maybe we should have a gas chamber of sorts. Maybe, as he's saying here, we ought to line people up once a year and say, sir, madam, justify to us, society, your existence, because we can't keep you alive just to exist. Amy, you've got an IQ of 72. Madam, stand up and justify your motherhood. Show us the intellectuals, the people who are far smarter than you. Justify that you should be allowed to have your baby. A woman who is going to school for the last 2 years to try to be a better mother, who the state has nothing on. No neglect, no abuse, nothing. Yes, could something happen? Yes, something could. So we're going to now protect every child that we say, oh, something could happen to that child. Nothing has happened to that child. The house is clean. Mother is attentive. She's taken everything the state has required. She loves her children. Who do we think we are? What have we become? That broke my heart all day yesterday. I was on the verge of tears all day yesterday. You remember the song End of the Innocence by Don Henley? I know that became a big story about Ronald Reagan, you know, because in the video there's one deal about, you know, we elected this old man beating plowshares into swords. But it also had pictures of Dealey Plaza. It talked about a loss of innocence. I listened to it last night, laying in bed. Remember when the days were long and rolled beneath a deep blue sky? We didn't have a care in the world with mom and dad standing by. Who knows how long this will last? Now we've come so far so fast. But somewhere back there in the dust, that same small town in each of us. I need to remember this. Let me take a long last look before we say goodbye. But this is the end of innocence. It was interesting to me that I ended my day with that song last night. That's what came to mind. Because I started my day with something from the Goo Goo Dolls. And I listened to the lyrics yesterday morning as I got up and turned on the shower. I started my day with this. You ask me what I want this year. I'll try to make it kind and clear. Just a chance that we will find better days. I don't need boxes wrapped in strings, designer love and empty things. Just a chance that maybe we'll find better days. I need some place simple where we could live. And something only you can give, and that's faith and trust and peace while we're alive. The one poor child who saved this world. There's 10 million more who probably could if we all just stopped and said a prayer for them. I wish that everyone was loved tonight and somehow stop this endless fight just for the chance that maybe we'll find better days. So take these words and sing out loud, because everyone is forgiven now, because tonight's the night the world begins again. Somehow stop this endless fight. We haven't been innocent for a long time. I don't know if anybody ever really was innocent. But there was something about believing in a better tomorrow, and I still do. But I won't be able to do it if we can't stand up for people like Amy. If we can't stand up to a state that says, sir or madam, justify to us your existence. Our sponsor this half hour is American Financing, a better mortgage experience. Whether you're looking to buy or refinance, American Financing is your answer, because they have a salary-based consultant that's on the phone with you, working dedicated to making sure that you get a smart mortgage choice so you can make a decision and something that will align with your financial needs and your financial goals. These people work for you. They don't work for the bank. They work for you. American Financing, you get a straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. They also do reverse mortgages now. Reverse mortgages, good way to increase monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining ownership of your home. Do your own homework on this. Call their number, 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yes.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Let me go to Charles in Florida. Hello, Charles. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi.
How are you, sir? Turn your radio down. You're on.
Yeah, I'm on. I appreciate taking my call. I really didn't want to take a call. I just wanted to send some money. If that lady you're talking about with the government trying to make her prove she's smart enough to have her kids,
yes,
and I'm going to give her $100.
Oh, good for you.
I think other good Americans ought to do the same thing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. They set something up? There's a place that you can go and send her some money. They've had it up for a while. They need to reach $30,000, and the last I saw it was $300. Nobody knows about this. By the way, we have a reporter who has been following this for a while now, and we just want to check into everything. I just want to turn over every stone. You know, she's just up against a wall, and I don't know how she's going to fare. And I think she's pretty alone. Her husband is not as sharp as she is. I don't know much about the husband. What I found out about her father, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody's parent. I don't know the situation, but her father doesn't sound like a great guy. The aunt is on her side saying, look, my niece is capable. Here's a girl that gets up every day and works at the grocery store. Now she can't find a job. Lost her job at the grocery store, now can't find a job. This family is just under attack. And we'll have more information on this and more ways for you to get involved and help. But the first thing you need to do is help spread the word about this story. Make people aware of this story. And then we'll have action steps we can all take.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, boy. Republicans in Congress are trying to bypass Trump to shore up health care. Donald Trump has said that the White House is a real dump. More on Scaramucci. Is any of that, what are we going to do about any of that? We're going to go into it a little bit today so you're aware of it, especially what the Congress is doing to try to cut the president off. Like, the president is the problem with the health care thing? I think it's you, Congress.
I think the president's ready to sign
anything they give him. There is another story from Kalamazoo that I think is important to watch. 5-month-old boy now fighting the same disease that Charlie Gard had. 5-month-old boy in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's rare. It's life-threatening. The parents are telling local press now they're fighting and doing everything they can to save his life. Baby Russell is the name of the baby. Same disease, Charlie Gard. Let's see how things work here as opposed to socialized medicine. Let's see what happens with this group of parents. Can we get them on and see what have they talked to the hospital in New York, the doctor who is specializing? Have they gotten to him yet?
To get him to Boston.
Won't it be interesting if they can get him to Boston in a horrible, horrible free market system where people are dying on the streets for an experimental procedure to try to save his life, where in the glorious socialized medicine world, they just let the kid die and argued about it. Unbelievable. There's also another story that I think you need to be aware of that I think is really very... It explains a lot. You know, I'm a dog lover. For any of you who have dogs, if you have a dog, you're going to really want to pay attention to this one. Hipsters in Brooklyn. They're woke. Okay. So, you know, can't put them to sleep. They know what's going on. They're woke. Hipsters now in Brooklyn are... now seeing the stories about the, vaccinating children and how that's turning everybody into a robot and autism and everything else. I know I'm not willing to wholly reject that, but I'm also not willing to wholly embrace that. But I'm willing to listen to that. But they've taken it a step further. In Brooklyn now, there is a very high number of hipsters that are not willing to vaccinate their dogs because they believe that that will give their dog increased
autism
chance of having autism. And I will tell you something. Let me tell you something. My dog is 77, still doesn't say a word to me.
Yeah.
And
what?
And can't
he's
read.
Autistic.
Still
he's,
cannot read.
I think he's on the spectrum.
Big time.
He's on the
big
autistic
time.
Spectrum.
He, once in a while, he'll bite and chew on things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's dogtistic?
How could you make fun of something like
that? Fun of it? I'm my saying dog, it's dogtistic.
Both my dogs.
In
fact,
dog-tism.
I believe all of my dogs, which all have had vaccines.
Dogtism.
Don't.
You keep saying
it. You're saying it's dogtism, no, and
autism.
Now you're acting as if it's not a real thing.
It is autism. When you see my dog now, I just want you to try to look at my dog and not think autistic. He is totally on the spectrum. He is not good at social gatherings. He will come out. All of a sudden, he'll just try to make love to somebody's leg. Like I said, he's chewing on things. I can't get him to read. He does not speak to his mom and I. Sometimes he will just crap in the house. I don't know what to do. Mm. It's the vaccines.
No, it's not. not at all.
Are you saying that these hipsters who are woke in Brooklyn may be dead freaking asleep? Is that what you're saying to me?
I am saying that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. As someone who does reject the vaccine's autism link, I also reject the fact that any dog has ever been diagnosed with autism because it doesn't exist in dogs, or at least has never been diagnosed in it.
How about climate change and global warming? Does that exist? Human caused climate change? Yes or no?
Absolutely. Of course it does.
Okay.
See, I'm woke.
Liar. Liar. Now, dogs do have a 0.04 chance of being allergic to vaccinations. Mm-hmm. But
0.04%?
Yeah. Okay. But doctors are saying there really is not a worry of having your dog, due to a vaccine, get autism.
Yeah, no, it's not a thing. Yeah. Just in case you were worried about it somewhere, it is not a thing.
It's not even a thing in humans.
It's worse. You know. It is worse than human autism. Dogs, when they're autistic, they eat their own poop.
You're saying dogtism is worse than autism?
Okay, continue to make fun. I'm just trying to save dogs.
But at least autism is a thing among humans.
Oh, can you believe?
But the vaccine giving humans autism is not a thing. That's not a thing.
I read this story today, and I thought to myself, Lord, we're begging you to destroy us. We're just begging you to destroy us. We are so incredibly stupid. The woman with the IQ of 72, whose house is clean, who's had visitations for the last 14 months. There's no neglect. There's no problem. We're saying justify you being a mother, and these people who are, quote, woke hipsters won't have vaccinations for their dogs because they're worried their dog will have autism. You don't need to destroy us, Lord.
We've done a pretty good job of that.
We're doing it ourselves.
Really are.
Oh, my gosh.
It doesn't get much worse than dog autism, does it?
You mean dogtism?
It's just stupid.
We're going to make dogtism happen. It'll go on.
Got to happen. These are the same people that believe in global warming, though. Man-caused global warming.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, RFK Jr. is one of the preeminent guys that come out on TV and tell you about how bad global warming is and how autism is related to vaccines. Now, I don't know if he's on the dogtism bandwagon yet, but it's coming. If he's not on it already, it's coming. And you'll notice RFK Jr. is not a conservative. They try to make science deniers out of all conservatives. You think Jenny McCarthy is a conservative?
Nope.
Is Jenny McCarthy the world's most prominent vaccine autism advocate, a big-time conservative? Is that what she is? I don't think so.
I just can't take, as people actually are struggling around the world and here in America, actually struggling to be able... Imagine the family in Kalamazoo. Imagine you find out that your child has what Charlie Gard had. You know what just happened in England. God help you if you don't have insurance. Are you on Obamacare? What's going to happen if you were on Obamacare? Is that family on Obamacare? Is that family on our entry gateway drug of socialized medicine? So imagine what they're going through. Imagine what they're feeling and what they're thinking. Imagine if you don't have insurance, and even if you do have insurance, will that disease and its treatment be covered? Imagine what that family is going through. And these people who are so-called woke are talking about not getting their dogs vaccinated for rabies because it might cause autism in my dog.
I know this is one of the issues they're trying to fix with Obamacare, but Obamacare does not even cover dogtism.
Are you sure of that?
Almost positive.
You're trying really hard.
I am. It's
You're trying
happen.
Really hard.
People are going to be talking about this. This will be a segment on MSNBC in 2 weeks.
Dog
the dogtism problem.
Don't laugh. No. Do not laugh. That could absolutely be a story.
100%.
We just need to get Trump to not tweet for a day so they can actually do a segment not related to Trump. And then that first segment definitely dogged him.
I mean, he can still tweet, right?
He should tweet about dogtism. Yeah. You want to get people started and thrown off on another topic. You know, people are always like, "Oh, they're talking about Russia every day and all the intrigue and the palace intrigue in the White House." Just tweet once about dogtism, and you've got them thrown off for an entire week.
So I'm reading this book that Stu turned me on to, and Stu assigned a book to me.
Yeah,
and that's right. And I'm actually reading it, and I've never seen a better warning than the one you gave me. By the way, you're going to have a problem with his anti-religion spin. Anti-religion spin?
Well, I didn't think you'd actually read it.
Yeah, it's not an anti-religious spin.
Angels of Our Better Nature.
It is. My gosh.
Brutal.
Brutal.
It was to the
religion.
Point when I was reading it, I was like, I don't even know if I can continue with this. It's so anti-religion. However, when you get past that, it gets really interesting.
But it's really, I mean, holy cow.
You're right.
I've never seen... I don't think Satan is as anti-Christian and religion as that writer is.
However, again, it was recommended by Penn Jillette.
Yeah.
So you'd expect.
Yeah, but still, Penn is, I mean, you know.
No.
Anyway.
And I thought more about the era, right? It's talking about that era.
Yeah.
At the time when, you know, you go back in biblical eras, the world was pretty a brutal place.
Yeah. So the world has, you know, living in Chicago, in the worst section of town, and this does not excuse it or not say, hey, we should be happy about it, nothing. But living in Chicago at the poorest level in the worst part of town is still better than most of human history. The violence and disregard for life and humans and everything else. And we are now looking at vaccines. My wife has had an ear infection for 2 weeks. And she's taken all kinds of medicine for it and antibiotics. She can't get it to unplug. And it's still infected. Okay. That's not good. That's not good. I mean, what do we have to give her? What antibiotic do we have to give? And I've been thinking about this because my wife is never sick. And I told her, I said, you die before me. I am digging you up and beating the snot out of you. I'm going first, not the other way around.
You're doing everything you can.
Right. I'm trying too. And so she's always so helpful. If there was no antibiotic, she'd probably be dead by now over an ear infection. And here we are living in this time of remarkable medicine, just remarkable. And it's starting to go the other way because the doctor never ever said anything other than, hey, make sure you finish that. How about make sure you finish that or your body will become resistant to worse and then we won't have any more antibiotics. How about finishing that? Because all I ever heard my whole life was, hey, better finish that. And I'm like, yeah, right, doc. As soon as I feel better, I'm saving that so I don't have to come see you the next time.
Everybody thinks.
Right?
Yes.
So finish that. Exactly. Otherwise, we will have deadly disease that we can't stop. Well, we're starting
to... Like dogtism.
Thank you, Pat. See, it's happening. This is real. It's happening.
It's working, Stu. It's working.
And now this. Last week in Chicago, a local woman was carjacked in a quiet suburb. This woman had a concealed carry permit holder. She drew her gun. She defended herself. She didn't fire a shot. The locals said she was to blame. Okay, wait a minute. She was carjacked. She had a gun. She was a permit holder. She pulled her gun. She defended herself. She didn't fire a shot. And it's her fault. That's the world we live in. The world that is being run over by people who believe in dogtism. And that if you defend yourself, you're the troublemaker. You need somebody to defend you, and that's exactly what the USCCA does. They know your Second Amendment rights should be celebrated and protected. This is a like-minded community of Americans that know and are protecting you, the protector. They're giving you a chance right now to win a brand new gun as soon as you activate your USCCA membership today. All you have to do is just go to protectanddefend.com right now. I want you to find out what they do and get this protection. They protect you before, during, after. Nobody thinks about what happens after. She, I guarantee you, didn't. She trained and trained and trained, carried a gun, knew her situations, knew when to pull the trigger, knew when not to pull the trigger. She didn't pull the trigger, and then another bad guy came, this one in a suit with a briefcase. The USCCA will protect you from those bad guys. Go to protectanddefend.com, protectanddefend.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the
Glenn
Beck Program.
Seriously, I'm worried about the dogtism that my dogs have. I didn't realize this until Brooklyn hipsters stopped giving their dogs vaccines because it could lead their dog into autism.
But then your dogs have had the vaccines?
Yeah, they've all had the vaccines. And it just occurred to me maybe that's why they're not reading. That's why they're not socializing. Mm-hmm. They haven't talked to us. Sometimes they just go, you know, and lay on their carpet and ignore us. They'll chew things, which is completely inappropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I've been so focused on, I've been calling, you know, Uno, Victor, Ella. I don't know how they identify.
No.
I've been calling Ella. She might have felt like a boy dog the whole time.
You need gender non-specific names for them.
Exact Uno.
Like Uno.
Uno. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least I'm trying there, and I didn't, you know.
Not with Victor and Ella.
Not with Victor and Ella. I trapped them into oppression, horrible dog oppression, and sentenced them by giving them vaccines to dogtism for the rest of their life. My gosh. What's next?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Congressional Republicans moved Tuesday to defuse President Trump's threat to cut off critical payments to health insurance companies. They maneuvered around the president toward a bipartisan legislation to shore up the markets for the Affordable Care Act. So now we've got the Republicans. Now what we have them doing is doing everything they can to save Obamacare. It is absolutely amazing the world we live in. As I told people last hour, before you joined in Brooklyn, there are hipsters now that are saying that they don't want to have their dogs vaccinated because they're worried their dog might get autism from the vaccine. So why should the news make any sense? However, there are some things that we can actually do something about. There are some things, stories that actually matter, that we don't have to go through Washington or the press or anybody else. I'll give you one of those stories right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sarah Gordon gave birth to a baby named Dana. Baby's dad was not a good guy, relinquished parental rights. That was fine with Sarah. She intended to raise her daughter with the help of her parents, but Sarah has an IQ of 70. Well, now Massachusetts Department of, you know, Family Health and whatever the hell they call it has deemed that mental retardation. So the state had to come in and take the child away from Sarah. Yesterday, we told you of another story that is happening in Redmond, Oregon. Amy Fabrini, there was a complaint lodged that her father of her child was not feeding the dog at the proper time and not changing the baby fast enough. State came in, found nothing. No abuse, no neglect, a clean house, everything. Took the baby away. Then, that wasn't good enough. When she had a second baby, they came at the hospital and took that baby away. There are no charges here. The state just says she's not smart enough. We talked to her on yesterday's program. She seems pretty sharp to me. Walter Olson, he's in the with the Cato Institute. He has actually been following this story and wanted to get him on. Walter, this is, we're living in a parallel universe. Are we even living in America anymore?
These stories are so disturbing, and I wanted to start by thanking you for bringing them to national attention. I can't think of any story that I would rather have brought to national attention than the one you had yesterday with Amy Fabrini. And when you read what the Oregonian reporter, and she did wind up with an advocate in the press who wrote up the story, I thought, very compellingly in the Oregonian, she turned to an association that watches and says that something like half of people diagnosed with intellectual disability lose their children to social services. And again and again, it's in this kind of situation where they aren't proving anything definite. They're just going on some expert recommendation. There's no abuse. There's no neglect. Often there are family members and others who disagree with the decision, just as the aunt and chaperone did and just as the volunteer did in Amy Fabrini's case. But the state decides, and the state somehow or other has all of this discretion that winds up winning. You know, you can't convince the judges necessarily. You can't convince the bureaucracy. If they want to take your child, they got them.
Okay, so help me. What am I missing in this story? There's no proof or even allegation of abuse. Nothing on neglect. The house is clean, is tidy. She has gone through every class, passed them. She has been a model. And what is the charge?
So far as I can tell, there is no charge. Now, let me tell you how the other side would argue it, because I know when I began commenting on this, I got some critical pushback, and a lot of it was on two points. One of them is, well, the mom's dad is mad at her and thinks that she doesn't make a good mom. Okay, well, that's one piece of evidence. Meanwhile, you've got a bunch of other people who know her well and have known her much more recently than her estranged dad who are saying, yeah, she's fine. So I don't weigh that very heavily. The second thing is, well, the state might have additional evidence and they're not allowed to talk because of privacy laws and so forth. Well, again, maybe there's something there, but you'd think that in judicial proceedings, you as a parent would have a right to get it all on the record. You need to be able to let the public see whether justice was done.
This is what the Constitution is all about. I have to be able to know the charges against me. I have to be able to defend myself. You can't hide behind the children and say, well, their privacy. I have a right to know what it is that you're accusing me of doing before you take my children.
Exactly. They're supposed to give you that notice and that chance to contest for a traffic ticket. And if they're supposed to do it for a traffic ticket, they sure should do it if they're going to take your kids away.
This is so much like Charlie Gard, where the state gets too far ahead of themselves, and then they just hide behind the state apparatus, and they dig in their heels, and there's no recourse. This, I mean, honestly, Walter, I
This is un-American. And, you know, the only thing I can think of is, okay, there have been cases where people who have lower IQs have put their kids in the bath and then kind of got distracted or wasn't thinking or whatever, and they come back a few minutes later and the child has drowned. Okay, that has happened. But that has also happened to people who are, quote, normally abled as well. We can't predict everything that could happen to a child. We have to give the benefit of the doubt to the parent. And if we look and say there's no sign here of anything, this looks like a good and loving parent, what right do we have to disrupt that bond?
Exactly. And one of the observers who's close to the situation blames the risk averse. It's been called worst first thinking. Lenora Scanese of Free Range Kids says that if you're in the child protection business, then you know everything looks like a danger. Oh, you know, they're riding a bike unaccompanied or whatever the thing is. You always think of the worst possible thing that could happen. But the thing that they're not admitting is that being taken into foster care, being ripped away from parents who love you more than anyone else and have been raising you, that's a risk too. In fact, it's a pretty bad risk.
You know, I have to tell you, there's
imposing on people.
It drives me crazy when my older kids first went into school, first grade. I said, "Hey, can I just get a?" You know, stupid me. Can I get like a syllabus or something? First grade. I just want to follow it home so I know what you're doing, so I can help plow the fields and know exactly what's happening. And the teacher looked at me and said, "Mr. Beck, we have it now. We're okay. We have it now." And I looked at that teacher and I said, "Excuse me, but you assist me, not the other way around." And the state just believes that it's their responsibility, their position. And I have news for you. The best teacher in the world does not love my child as much as I do, doesn't know my child as much as I do. Yeah, there are bad parents. There are parents that don't care about their children. But for the vast majority, we care about our children more than somebody who's a stranger, especially someone who is working for the state.
It was so strange in the Charlie Gard controversy. I went and I read, British defenders of what was going on there. And the best one that I found, the most intelligent defense of what happened in Britain was, there's a difference of opinion, and someone has to decide because, after all, the medical opinion is just as valid as the parents' opinion. And I thought, am I glad I live in America, where, for the most part, you start out with a premise that the parents, are of course going to be the first to decide because they're the parents and they love their kids and know their kids more than the doctors do, and only in the exceptional case, only if there is some neglect or abuse, as you say, do we step back from that assumption. But it's that assumption that keeps us free from a government running everything.
So yesterday she was on and she said, I'm looking for an attorney that's not from the local area. They don't have any money. I'm not concerned about money because if this checks out the way it's checking out to me, then we'll help her with the money. Are there institutions and are there attorneys out there that are really well-versed on this that can win against a state that doesn't have to produce any evidence?
There is one group called, I think it's Family Defense Center, which has provided legal help to groups facing CPS for what seemed to be bad reasons. But it's one small group. And what always amazes me is you've got big, long-established legal defense groups for every other interest you can name. You know, good interests, bad interests. There will be a bunch of lawyers getting pro bono credit with their law firms, but not in this one. You know, I had all power to the group, I think it's based in Chicago, that is trying to do this. But I just wonder why why you don't have something, if not the size of the ACLU, then at least, you know, pretty darn big group, systematically looking out so that there is someone, you know, with the Davids that are the parents against the Goliaths that are the CPS bureaucracies.
Where does this go next? Talking to Walter Olson of the Cato Institute, what's next? How close are they to permanently being shut out and her losing her children?
According to the coverage, the state has been begun proceedings to cut off their parental rights permanently in order to place the children for adoption with another family. So that makes it sound like a last call, now or never, you know, find them a defense. And it probably starts out as a defense against severance of rights before it even gets to the point of restoring custody to them. Lawyers out there who may be listening, that's the stage the case is at. Probably want to call earlier rather than later to find out if there's some way to help.
Okay, Walter, thank you for covering this. You've been on this long time, and thank you for caring and realizing the real true impact of this story. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Walter Olson from the Cato Institute. Here's what I would like to ask you. Can you still get the email addresses that they gave yesterday on the air and the Facebook page or the website that they've put together? This is a family that we are trying to help out, and we're working on some things behind the scenes, but I just want to make sure that I haven't missed anything on this, but it's all checking out. But there's got to be an attorney. They had some attorneys call yesterday. We need to know who the experts are. We need to go and find somebody who can really win this. But the first thing that has to happen, because we're running out of time on this, this is going to end by September. We really need attorneys. They're going to need some money. We'll get to that tomorrow, but the first thing that really has to happen is you have to spread the word on this story like nobody's business. There's a story on The Blaze from yesterday. There's a story at glenbeck.com from yesterday. There is a Walter Olson from the Cato Institute. He's been covering it. You need to spread the word on this and get people to understand the plight of Amy. Amy's plight is our plight. If they come and take this child away, these two children, which they have and gotten away with it, if they can do this to Amy without any charges, without neglect, without any abuse, with a clean house, with a girl who sure sounds like a lot better than a lot of parents that I have seen and heard elsewhere. They can just come and take her children away from her. And then she can't defend herself because they're going to hide behind privacy. What are the charges? We all lose our children. We all lose our children. It's only a matter of time. First, they came for Amy's children. And I did what? Amy's plight is our plight. I urge you to know this story, and I urge you to spread this story. The first thing that has to happen is we need a lot of people to know this story and care. Now this. Alan Greenspan said the other day, we should be worried about the growing bond bubble. He said, quote, the real problem is that when bond market bubble collapses, long-term interest rates will rise. We're moving into a different phase of the economy to stagflation we haven't seen since the 1970s. Fantastic. Fantastic. There was another story today that, you know, the big Wall Street movers and shakers, they're all moving into a position to bet against the bond market.
Again, fantastic. Thank you for that. Make your money going down. Bet against that. Bet against it. Make sure you're making your money while people are losing their pensions. Do it. Yes. Nothing more honorable, nothing better than making money on the destruction of cities and pensions and investments for other people who have worked hard their whole life. Why not? You're in Vegas. It's the crap table. Make all the money you can, because that's all that matters. I want you to call Goldline now. Here's a company that will guarantee that you won't lose a dime on your investment. If gold goes down in the next 3 months and you have invested $2,500 or more, $2,500 for the next 3 months, if gold goes down, they'll give you more gold to make it up. Nobody does that. You take money out of your stock market or wherever, your 401k, and you put $25,000 into an investment with Goldline. They will guarantee that you won't lose any money on that investment. If the price of gold goes down, they will make it up. Nobody else will do that. Why? Because they're doing the right thing. Everybody else is trying to gouge people's eyes out and just make a buck, make a buck, make a buck. I want you to call Goldline now, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Be one of the prepared people. Be a survivor. 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're just doing our research, just got a briefing that we'll digest and then present some of it to you tomorrow. What's going on in this case in Oregon is just remarkable what's happening. And let's just be honest. You know what? Let's look at the other side. Let's look at the state side. Okay. Amy has had children before. This is not her first child, second child. I think she's had four children, right? She had twins. And then these two, and they've all been taken away by the state. One, because her mother was the child care person with the first two, and she got a divorce and everything else. So those children, she didn't get custody of those children. Maybe we should just sterilize Amy. I mean, really, honestly, yeah, she's going to keep having children.
That's what the state is thinking.
Why don't we just sterilize her? What's wrong with that?
Seriously. Isn't three generations of imbeciles enough?
Right. Mm. Why aren't we just sterilizing people? Let's take your IQ. They don't. Mm. They can't have children. Let's just sterilize them.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Okay, a couple of things. The president has just signed the Russian Sanctions Act. That is...
Yay!
That's pretty remarkable. Wow, okay, good. So we got that going for us. I have two stories to bring to you. Now, I've brought a couple of stories to you today. The lead, the thrust of this show today has been, for me, do I just give up and walk away? And we all just leave. Go to the mountains. Go do something. Go, okay. You know, it's like, if the doctor told you today you have a terminal illness and you only have X number of months to live, would you go in and do the same thing every day exactly the way? Or would you make some changes in your life? Because I feel as though the doctor is telling me world, not America, world, humans, you have a terminal disease. And not much longer to live. The disease, I don't know the Latin name, but it's stupidity. And stupidity
is raging through your system right now. It's in your glands, it's in your livers, it's in your eyes, definitely in your tongue. There's nothing we there. If we remove it, all that's left is a little piece, possibly, of your scalp. So should we go back to work? Or should we just forget it and start doing something that is meaningful to you? That's kind of where I'm at today. Because I could tell you all the bad news that's happening, you know, all around the world, blah, blah, blah. You know all of it. And I could tell you, and we could dwell, and we could mock, and we could make fun of it, and we could feel superior that we're right and they're wrong, but that does nothing. Still, stupidity is raging through our system and eating it. I could tell you about Washington. I could tell you, as I did today, about the hipsters in Brooklyn who are now refusing to have their dogs vaccinated because they're afraid that their dogs will become autistic. I hadn't thought of that possibility until these really genius hipsters in Brooklyn, who are so woke. They're so far ahead of all of us. I mean, they've got it going on. I didn't even think that a dog could get autism. In fact, I know they can't. But now, if I may, look at it in a different way. Yes, you can't have dogtism. Your dogs can't be diagnosed with autism. But what if they could? See what I'm saying? Yes, your dog doesn't read. Yes, your dog still doesn't talk to you. After all the years, still doesn't talk to you. Misbehaves, acts out, chews on things. Yes, could be autism in your dog. Although there is absolutely nothing to ever say that dogs could or would ever get autism. But what if your dog does have autism? See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go to two places that people look to for credibility. And I just want to ask you, which one has more credibility? Because I can't decide. Here's contestant number one. He used to be a vice president. He used to, he and his wife used to lead an activist group against the evils of rap lyrics. And now he's all about climate change. And here he's going to talk to a guy who is a 50-year crabber that has lived on the Chesapeake Bay. Now, what they're arguing about, so you know, is, has sea level risen? Now, just so you can put this into context, Al Gore claims that, yes, the sea level is rising, and we're all going to die of a fiery, drowning death very soon.
They will be both fiery
and drowning.
Both. It will
be all of it. It will be blizzard, snows, and
drought.
Record heat. Mm-hmm. Okay, both of them will be happening to us, and it will be a horrible, grisly death, all because of global climate change, and already sea levels have already risen an alarming rate. Now, what is that alarming rate? I want you to know. The width, the thinness of a dime is how much we're talking about in the rise of the sea level. The thinness of a dime, which scientists have been able to measure by satellite, to tell us via satellite that the sea level has risen the thinness of a dime. Now, here's a guy who's a crabber. I mean, what does he know? And a mayor.
He's lived on this island in the Chesapeake Bay for 50 years.
Yeah,
but
he's now able to talk to contestant number one. Yes, let me reveal him. He's the one, he's the only, Al Gore.
I'm a commercial crabber, and I've been working in the Chesapeake Bay for 50 plus years. And I have a crab house business out on the water. and the water level is the same as it was when the place was built in 1970. I'm not a scientist, but I'm a keen observer. And if sea level rise is occurring, why am I not seeing signs of it? I mean, our island is disappearing, but it's because of erosion and not sea level rise. And unless we get a seawall, we will lose our island. But back to the question, why am I not seeing signs of the sea level rise?
What do you think the erosion is due to, Mayor?
Wave action, storms.
Has that increased any?
Not really.
So you're losing the island even though the waves haven't increased.
Yes, this erosion has been going on since Captain John Smith discovered the island and named it.
Oops.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's gotten to our doorstep now, and we focus on it more.
Well, arguments about science aren't necessarily going to be of any comfort to you, and I'm sorry for what you're going through.
Stop for a second before I get to this. I just want you to know, they're seeing erosion. What do you think that's caused by?
Waves?
Waves. I don't know if you know this, Al.
Water
but,
erodes things.
The cliffs of Dover weren't always cliffs. I know that's hard to understand, but it appears as though those cliffs have eroded. You know, sand wasn't always sand. It was rock. The black sand? That's because the land was volcanic rock. That's what makes it black. Pink sand? Because it was coral. It wasn't always like that.
That's what I'm telling you, though. That's how dangerous this is.
Coral was not always. It's not pink sand. Look at the pretty pink sand. There were rocks. Waves beat over it for millions of years and break it down to various. That's erosion. But
if we don't do something, we may have a hole that may turn into a canyon, that may turn into a Grand Canyon.
If we don't stop the Colorado River, damn it, there's going to be a big hole in the ground.
Wow.
And look what happened.
If only Al were here 150 million years ago. Oh, darn it!
He's not quite that old.
So now he goes into his science explanation.
Your neighbors on Tangier Island. I read about you in the paper. There was a story in the Washington Post, I believe, after President Trump called you up. And it won't necessarily do you any good for me to tell you that the scientists do say that the sea level is rising in the Chesapeake Bay that you've lost about two-thirds of your island.
So what I'm telling you is... And this might be a little bit demeaning, but you're too stupid to know you're being demeaned. You don't know what you're talking about.
Right. And by the way, that is a quote from, it's a little demeaning to say this to them, but they're too stupid to understand.
To know they've been demeaned.
That's a quote from Al Gore. The thinness of a dime, the rise of sea level, which, boy, that's a tough margin, huh? That margin of error is... less than the thinness of a dime. That's the reason why you've lost two-thirds of your island. Two-thirds of your island. And I just want you to know experts agree. Now, there's expert number one that is leading 10% of the population, maybe more than that, over the cliffs of insanity. Don't ask how those cliffs were made. You don't want to know. But let me show you on the opposite side, where 10% is following this Pied Piper over the cliffs when we come back. Casper is our sponsor this half hour. Have you spent your nights just tossing and turning? I have to tell you, I almost brought in my pillow today because my wife went out and bought new sheets. I don't know what kind of stupid... all natural hemp sheets or whatever the hell they are, but they practically had twigs in them. It was, I swear to you, it was some sort of, I can guarantee you, it's like, these were on sale, they're just as good as everything else, and you're asleep fine, and they're all natural, and I'm telling you, it was like sleeping on rocks last night. There were a twig in the sheet. poked me in the eye, I swear to you, last night.
Do you have any waves that come into the bedroom?
I wish I...
Oh,
I
wish, could break down the rocks I wish you were I sleeping did. On last night.
Anyway, so if you've ever had a bad night's sleep, and it's the mattress, sheets, I can take off, and you'll never see them again. I don't know what happened to those sheets, sweetheart. Mattress is a little hard. You want the right mattress. Casper has two high-tech foams that guarantee that you have a great night's sleep, sleeping cool, comfortably, and fully supported every single night. And you can try it risk-free for 100 nights in your own home. Don't like it? They'll come up and pick it up and return. Even the thinness of the last dime will go right to you and your wallet. You won't lose a penny on it. It's just like trying it out in the store, except you're not in the store and you're actually sleeping on it, so you can actually know if it's the right mattress for you. Casper.com. Try it for 100 nights, risk-free. Shipping and returns also free. Can you get $50 off the purchase of your mattress if you use the promo code Beck? That's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Terms and conditions to apply. Casper.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Yeah.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So here's what's crazy. So you have Al Gore, 10% of the population is just listening to that guy. And then on the flip side, you have, I don't even know, 3%, 10% of the population that actually will listen to the news of this guy. Listen to
maybe
this.
You've had back pain before. Maybe you've had nerves that were cut off. This creates tingling. A lot of people have their feeling come back. I'm not going to make claims. It's research true. Organically based bio-PQQ, and it's not technically organic.
Oh.
The other stuff, synthetic, completely lab-made. This is made from organic sources, but the bacteria is GMO. I'll just tell you up front. But it's not like the super high-tech stuff. It's a bacteria that's just been bred to be able to then secrete and produce this. Just like beer is bacteria.
Okay.
A lot of beer bacteria, obviously. Right. But this one, that's how the Japanese do it.
Right.
It's bioidentical. The stuff is only found in comets and in trace amounts in blueberries.
Hey, this is the world we're living in.
Stuff is only found in comets and in trace amounts in blueberries. Well, and kumquats. Some kumquats have it.
Right. Every fifth kumquat.
What the hell?
What is that? First of all, GMOs, to this guy and his audience, are the worst thing imaginable.
Ever. Right, but he can make money off of them here.
But,
yeah, so
but this
it's fine.
GMO is different.
It's not a high-tech GMO. It's just it's a normal run-of-the-mill GMO.
Well, it's that's not a Japanese doing.
Yeah, it's a low-tech GMO. It's like, it's a poor man's GMO.
It's the kind of genetically modified organism that, let's say, cavemen developed.
Yeah. Or really, really, the guys who flunked out of, you know, chemistry and all of that, they're not smart enough. In fact, they blew up their lab themselves just trying to make a milkshake a few years ago. But they're the ones who put this together. It's not high tech at all.
No, you find them in comets and blueberries, and certain packages of Twizzlers.
God, do
blueberries come from comets? How did they get this substance?
It's
only available on comets.
You didn't realize
that happened.
You didn't realize that blueberries. Look at them; they're baby comets.
Okay,
that's they're baby comets.
Baby
take a blueberry. Take a blueberry, freeze it, put it in space. You know, make it 65 million times larger.
Well, maybe it's just
what
closer.
Do you identify that as? A comet.
Maybe it's just closer than we think. When they go across the sky, they look pretty small.
Right.
So maybe it's just a blueberry, and it's only like 40 feet up. You just don't realize
40
it.
Feet. Maybe it's just out of arm's length. You're pointing, and you're about an inch away. Look at that in the sky.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, tell me, because you listen to that clip, and that clip is from the John Oliver rant that he had on Alex Jones this weekend, which is actually, even though I'm not a huge fan, very funny. But if you look at that clip that we just played of Alex Jones, it's just nonstop disclaimers. He knows he's lying to his audience. It's just and it's the same thing from Al Gore with Dr. Maslowski. We've played that clip a million times where he has so many disclaimers built into what he's saying. You know he knows what he's saying is alarmist, or he's justifying something that he knows is untrue. But he just says it because he knows his audience is going to go along with it. When you're this far down this road, you never disagree with what the host is saying. That's amazing.
We really have arrived at the time when I said, you're not going to know who to believe. You're not going to know what to believe. Everything will be upside down. Nobody will have any credibility. I hope you have yours at that point. Or at that point, do you have your credibility?
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. There's lots of things going on today. I'm struggling to understand the other side of the arguments of common sense. And perhaps it's because common sense is dead in America, but I'm trying to understand it. And I want to start with a story for the life of me I cannot figure out. Maybe you can. We begin with illegal aliens right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, let me give you a couple stories, then we're going to get right to illegal aliens. But there's a story in USA Today. Donald Trump thinks the White House is a real dump. They're saying that it was just a round of golf and the White House is a real dump. It must be that he was joking or whatever. How does this affect our lives? Do we have to know everything out of this man's mouth? Do we? Do we have to
Certainly
know everything?
That way.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Do I have to know everything he said? Here's another detail in this. Is this not the most beautiful asphalt you've ever seen in your life?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. When he's on a cart path in the golf cart, he'll say, is this not the most beautiful asphalt you've ever seen in your life?
I mean, I've seen some pretty good-looking asphalt. I don't know that I've actually seen the asphalt in his golf cart.
Yeah, that his golf cart was on, but I don't know. And then, the White House is a real dump. Okay, well, first of all, it might be. It's pretty old. It's pretty old and hasn't had a renovation since the 1950s. A significant renovation. You live should. In a house that hasn't had a renovation since the 1950s. However, I don't think that the White House is a dump. I also hope that the president didn't say that in anything other than a joke.
Right. And again, period. It's a secondhand quote. It's an anonymous source.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason to make a big deal out of it.
And you know what? John Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy, I don't think they like the White House either. And what they did is Jackie spent all of her time going out and trying to find the original pieces from the original White House, buy them up and give them to the White House. The Trumps could do that. I mean, if indeed he did think it was a dump, then replumb the thing. I mean,
do something. I mean, it's been remodeled and upgraded, right? You said it hasn't the White House since the
1950s. Not a full upgrade since the 1950s.
But surely they don't have the same kitchen from the
1950s. No. Yes. No.
So it has been updated.
It's not a complete renovation.
They took it down to the shell in the 1950s.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah. The White House was gone for... White House was gone... I don't even know... Was it Eisenhower or... Truman. What Truman? Truman didn't even get to live in the White House, I don't think. I think he lived in the Executive Mansion or one of the places right across the street from the White House. Remember, he was shot going in there. Truman was. And it was because he didn't have the access to the White House. He wasn't living there. He was living across the street, and as he's walking in the front door, guy comes up and shoots him.
That's when they were putting in the secret basement.
It is when they were putting in the secret basement. That's exactly what they did. 1950s, they were putting in fallout shelters and everything else. But they took it all the way to the outside walls. So there are pictures of there are pictures of it, nothing but studs, the original studs back in the 1950s.
And, you know, to be honest about it, a public servant should live in a building that is a dump to the, one of the richest men in the world. Right? Like, it should be a downgrade from wherever he was living before.
Correct. But it's, I mean, to describe the White House as a dump.
It's obviously an exaggeration. Just, and my guess is if he said it at all, which we don't know, it was a joke. Right? Like, man, that place is a dump compared to Mar-a-Lago.
It's not a comment on the history of the White House. It's a comment from a guy who's one of the richest men in the world, who lives in houses and apartments that he built himself, custom designed the way he wanted it. Of course he thinks it's a dump.
And it's not done in gold lamé, which he's used to. That's probably another problem.
He does seem to like that. Now, the other thing is that we do have a story from, what's his name, speaking of joking, Scaramucci. Where he came out and he said the interview that he gave to, what was it, Vanity Fair, off the record?
New Yorker.
That was so foul-mouthed. He now came out and said, oh, that was just a joke. I was joking. That was humorous. No, you weren't.
No way.
Get out of here.
Stop it.
Own it. He was trying to intimidate the reporter to give him the source. You know, people do that all the time. He just did it very sloppily by not going off the record, first of all. And second of all, by trashing, I mean, not only did he say, you know, the vulgar things about people like Steve Bannon, he also said he was going to fire everyone in the communications department. What does that do for morale of your department, right? I mean, that's a big one. And then he also said he gathered intelligence and digital fingerprints from the FBI and the DOJ, which would be blatantly illegal on his own staff. Which, I mean, I'm sure he was lying, but I mean, really, the swearing is like way down the list on that particular interview.
Okay, so one more story that I don't understand. Is there anybody working for the American people? Anybody? Is there anybody who's actually working for them?
Charlize Theron, but outside of that, no.
Yeah. Boy, you have not given your Atomic Blonde report.
At any moment, I'm always prepared to go with to talk about Atomic Blonde. It's always something I'm prepared to do.
I could go and talk about the American people and how no one's working for them. Or
I think this may be more important
to the Atomic Blonde. I'm going with Atomic Blonde. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Good. The ayes have it. Atomic Blonde.
The first line.
That's how bad things are with me today. I am just not in any mood to talk about anything that's happening in the world.
What actor has the first line in Atomic Blonde? You might
there
think
are lines?
Charlize Theron. Yes, there are actually words in this movie. Charlize Theron, fair guess. James McAvoy, one of the co-stars.
Wait, there's other people in the movie besides Charlize
John
Theron?
John Goodman?
And John Goodman is in the movie?
Wait. You're destroying this movie. Now you've thrown John Goodman into this movie.
John Goodman does a great job.
He plays a...
he remains fully clothed.
He does. There's no sex scene with Charlize and John Goodman.
That's good of him.
The actor with the first line. In Atomic Blonde, Ronald Reagan. Interesting.
That's cool.
The movie is way deeper than you'd think from the trailer, which is bizarre.
Is it the tear down this wall thing?
It is the tear down this wall thing because the movie, which you can't tell from the trailer at all, takes place in the 10 days leading up to the wall falling.
Oh, wow.
So it's set in that historical context, which is really interesting.
Oh, that's really cool.
And covers, they have, you know, news reports from that period. And
I've heard it has a pretty strong 80s soundtrack, too.
It does have a very strong 80s soundtrack.
Wow,
so really
hang
fun.
On just a second. What you're saying is this is really more of a historical
movie.
Documentation.
Yes, exactly.
Huh.
In fact, I just read a review the other day saying that it's an anti-communist historical drama is what it is.
I believe so. That has to be seen.
And that review was written by...
It was. It's an actual review. I posted it on my Facebook page. You can go to my Facebook page and find it. No.
So it's not anti-Reagan.
No. It's I would say, I mean...
It's anti-communism?
It's about the downfall of communism. Now, it's set in that context. So it's not like, hey, this is about the Berlin Wall falling. It's a spy story with these spies essentially... Right. Interacting in Berlin in that time period. So, chaos on the streets, the walls coming down. You have to, you can't cross back and forth. All that stuff's going on. So it's really a cool piece from that context. And you know, it has a real story and it's really solid. It is the fighting's unbelievable. It's great. It's a great action movie. But it was more story than I actually thought I was going to get, which you could argue is a good thing or a bad thing.
I didn't think that there was a story, so
right,
I was.
And I say the trailer
I was still willing
lends
to go.
The trailer lends you to believe that, you know, basically what happens is she kicks a lot of people and has sex. Like that's essentially what they tell you.
Oh, there's sex in it.
If I say no, can you see it? no, there's no sex in it. There's actually pretty limited. I mean, what is in there is, you know, brief but intense, but there's not a ton of sex in it. It's really more about, I mean.
And it's historical. It happened in the past.
Plus it's love.
It happened in the past.
Right.
And it was a very loving, you're right.
I don't know if they had latex back in the 1980s in some of those situations.
I will say they had a lot.
They did.
And she looks spectacular. The answer to that is, of course, yes. Some of the fighting scenes are fantastic. I mean, there's one scene where
is she believable in them?
Yeah, yeah, she really is. I mean,
I tell you, from the trailer, it looks like one of the best action movies I've seen in a long time.
It does look really good.
I just love the scene.
Well, she worked really
with
hard.
Her in the opening scene of the trailer with her in the hotel room. You know, death comes my way, but not today.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. And she, you know, again, we all understand the physics of these situations. We all covered the Serena Williams controversy. We all know that 108-pound Charlize Theron is not beating the crap out of a 300-pound guy. However, it is believable in the context of the film. And
she knows karate or jujitsu or something. That's
right.
Pretty
whatever.
And she's really good at it. She's got to be at least a black belt.
Guys, I can't take people. I cannot take people who say things like that. I can't take people. Did you also go to Star Wars and go, there's no such thing as a Death Star?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. There is a, to put it this way, there is a wall separating East and West Berlin. You have to cross the wall of believing Charlize Theron can kick the crap out of a really muscular.
I crossed that wall a long time.
If you can get across that wall, it's fantastic.
I have a feeling she could kick the crap out of you.
At least me.
She could give. I don't know if she could get the crap out of everybody else, but she could me. That's not saying a lot, but she could.
Yeah. I mean, I really
and I
liked
bet
it.
She's wanted to a few times.
Probably.
That's
very good point.
Possible.
It comes. The trailer makes you believe it's basically a nonstop action thing, and it's not really that. It's more story-oriented. There are parts of dialogue that, if you're looking for basically a music video of her kicking everybody's butt, you're going to get a little. It may move a little slow at times towards the beginning, but overall, I think at the end, you're pretty happy with it.
This is the most incredible review of all time.
Came in fourth this weekend.
Because it came in what?
Fourth.
Really? What's funny is it's the exact opposite of most reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
You see something like that, and you're usually like, okay, I win, and the storyline isn't really there. His review is like, and there was
a
storyline.
That's
and
so true.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And it was a nice addition to it.
Exactly.
It's like storyline is a special effect for this movie.
It's like a lot of people are like, I went to Playboy for the interviews, and who knows, there's naked women. I actually went the other way. I went for the naked women, and I saw a story.
Wow.
Which was pretty good.
Wow.
But, I mean, there's big twists in it that you don't expect and see coming. I mean, it's a good movie. It's not.
Did it leave it open for a sequel?
Oh, yes.
Okay. It's starting at the Berlin Wall with Reagan. Yeah, how many years you have to build up?
Oh, I mean, how
to today?
Every big historical event,
you
could see her in this context. You just drop her in this whole thing
She's
in the middle of every big
years
historical
old.
Event.
Gonna be,
so why was it fourth this weekend? Is it the rated R?
Well, it's rated R, and it's also a $30 million budget. They did not spend a lot on it. It's going to make a fortune in profit. So I would be very surprised if you don't see a sequel or at least an attempt at it.
Yeah, it made 18 already in
its
first weekend.
Yeah, in its first weekend. Almost
19,
I mean, but fourth, it's so. I don't understand why the movie industry does this. I mean, they just shoot themselves in the foot all the time. Rated R movies make half the amount as PG-13 movies. All you have to do is just edit a little bit.
Yeah, but you don't need to take away the love.
No, I'm not saying you do it on a Charlize Theron movie. Right. For the love of God, man, I'm not insane. I'm just saying that most of these movies, if it was PG-13, guarantee it would have made double. It would have made its investment back opening weekend. And why they do that is beyond me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it needed to be edgy, I think. So I think that's probably what they wanted to do with it. They did push the envelope. I mean, you'd have to edit a lot to get it to PG-13 because there's a lot of violence in it. I mean,
I just don't care. I mean, violence.
Historic violence.
I'm not offended. I'm just not offended or bothered by violence. I'm bothered by man's inhumanity to man for entertainment's sake.
I mean, a lot of people died for your entertainment in this particular film.
Oh, Charlize Theron. You could have at the end of the credit, many dogs and horses were not only killed, hurt, but they were tortured to make this movie. And I'd be like, okay.
Well, the out here is man's inhumanity to man. She's a woman. So you're clear.
And now this. Did you hear Rex Tillerson's comments about North Korea yesterday? We do not seek regime change. We do not seek an accelerated reunification of the peninsula. We do not seek an excuse to send our military north of the 38th parallel. We are not your enemy. We are not your threat. But you are presenting an unacceptable threat to us, and we must respond. We would like to sit and have a dialogue about the future. Our other options are not attractive.
Wow.
Uh-huh. I mean, when you really look at what's happening with North Korea, and we talked about it, Pat, the other day, about what they're doing with their submarines.
Yeah.
I don't know what course they're on. I mean, the usual course is they do stuff outrageous, and then they get everybody to the negotiating table, and then they get something. They're going through a massive drought. And the famine that is coming this fall and winter in North Korea is going to be extreme.
It's going to be worse than for anybody else because they've already got a built-in famine caused
because
by communism.
So this is going to get really bad. He cannot look as though he is acquiescing to us, especially during a famine, because he's blaming the famine and everything on us. If he then it looks weak to his own people, there could be an uprising against him. Also, it could mean a coup against him if he's weak at all. We're in a really dangerous situation. How is this going to affect the world? I don't know. But it's one of 100 things that could go wrong that could shut the banks. Now, think of this. North Korea does something, doesn't even launch a nuclear missile, just does something, or we respond and we decide to take a first strike. We take a first strike, and if we are not right on everything, let's say it starts on a Friday night. By Sunday, Seoul, South Korea, is gone. It's gone. A million are dead. Let's say they launch one missile to Tokyo, not a nuke, and Seoul is gone. That, I believe, is the number 4 economy, the number 3 or 2 economy, third economy, fourth economy, plus our economy, plus China will be involved at that point. What do you think happens to the banks? What do you think happens to everything? Please, please be prepared so you don't have to worry about these things. I want you to go to My Patriot Supply. Right now they have a 102-serving survival food kit. It's this week only. It's $99. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, all shipped free to your home. 102 servings of survival food. It's really good. It's $99. You don't have anything for your family. This is where you start. And for $100, you're done. You've got more than a 3-day supply of food just to make it in case there's a disruption.
A lot more than on 3-day.
I'm saying if you have a family, you know, let's say 4 or 5 people, you still have a lot more, but you got it. You're covered. Call 800-200-7163, 800-200-7163, or online with preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com, 800-200-7163.
We have won
the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK.
President has just released a statement he did weigh in on. I don't know if he wrote all of this, but he did weigh in on it. Tell me which part he weighed in on. Give me a shorthand. We're up against the clock.
Today, I signed into the law the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, which enacts new sanctions on Iran, North Korea, and Russia. I favor tough measures to punish and deter bad behavior by the rogue regimes in Tehran and Pyongyang.
That doesn't sound like him at all.
No. I express my concerns to Congress about the many ways it improperly encroaches on executive power. Let's see. I'm going back about 10 paragraphs in. Maybe this one. I built a truly great company worth many billions of dollars.
That is
the part of the reason I was elected. As president, I can make far better deals with foreign countries
than
Congress.
There he is.
He just wrote that one in. The last paragraph. He's like, and I made a lot of money. Amazing. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
We have a good friend of the program in. His name is Chad Robichaux, and he has written a new book, An Unfair Advantage: Victory in the Midst of Battle. He is really a truly remarkable guy. Special Operations, Recon Marine, 8 deployments in Afghanistan and the War on Terror. Pro MMA champion, and as Pat constantly harps on, somebody with bad cauliflower ear. I don't know why, but Chad, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, great to be back.
You started a foundation that I think is tremendous, and I want to talk about your book, but I want to start on two things. First, tell everybody about the foundation you started.
Mighty Oaks Warrior Programs is a foundation that started to pay back what others did for me when I came home. You know, as we talked about before, I came home from Afghanistan and I fell on my face really hard. I was diagnosed with PTSD, had my own battle with facing divorce in our family, my own battle with almost taking my own life. And once I got on the other side of it and I realized that I wasn't the only one suffering. At the time, I thought I was the only one. Yeah. And I knew there was a problem and I felt like, you know, somebody's got to do something about this. And why not me? I felt like I had found the answer. And so I started to... an effort to even pay it forward to one other person. And now today, you know, 6 years later, we've had 1,500 graduates from our program. And with the 20-plus suicides a day, we've had 0 suicides from any of our graduates.
Fantastic.
And then on the resiliency side, we've spoken to at least over 100,000 warriors in active duty, trying to prevent them from ever ending up in a place like I was in.
Well, we're really thrilled to be partnered with you on any level on that. And I know you're doing a big fundraiser. Is it this weekend up in Arlington?
In Arlington, on Friday night, myself and Sergeant Major Kent, who's the 16th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, will be speaking at our third annual gala in D.C. And it's at the Army Navy Country Club.
Okay. And you're also doing one this fall in the Woodlands, Texas, and I'll be there for that one.
November.
Go ahead.
November 4th. Yes. Yeah,
and we'll talk about that. Can I ask you about your opinion on what is happening in North Korea? A frightening statement was just released from our Secretary of State. Lindsey Graham said yesterday, war with North Korea is inevitable. Mm-hmm. I cannot see a way that we go to war with North Korea that doesn't end in a million dead.
Yeah, it's not a war like we've even experienced in the last 16 years, the probability of that. And, you know, as someone...
Not even Vietnam. I mean, this is more like old school World War II kind of stuff.
Right.
Do you agree?
I agree. It's this is what, you know, kind of our worst fear could be, a potential of a conflict with North Korea. And, you know, as someone who's a father of a military, my son's a Marine, as someone who works with the military, this is really scary because... You know, there's only so much even from a diplomacy position that we could do because these people are people we don't know what they're going to do. We don't have the dialogue to even know what they're next move is going to be. And so it's so unpredictable, and so the instabilities, you know, there's so much instability. It's really scary. I was hearing your segment earlier about the outcome, you know, the series of events that would unfold if we took a first strike or if they did horrible. Something crazy. It's
horrible. I mean, it's just I can't find a way other than going back to some sort of a Cold War. I mean, that's my solution. You got to get to a Cold War with these guys. We cannot fight a war with North Korea. It's just too many dead and literally collapse the economy of the world if we go there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your book, An Unfair Advantage. I really admire you. I admire you for not only what you've done, but who you came back to become, to transform your life. Unfair advantage. What is the unfair advantage?
Well, the unfair advantage is when we make the simple decision to align our lives with the lives we were created to live. And, you know, we're all going to face hardships in this world, whether we go to Afghanistan, Iraq, Korea, wherever we go in life, we're going to face hardships. And the truth is, in those battles, there is an unfair advantage to winning. And I believe I found that when I aligned my life with the life I believe God created me to live, stepped into a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And when I did that, all the hardships that I faced, and I tried everything. I tried the pills. I tried the counseling. I tried MMA and jiu-jitsu and all the fun things I did in my life. But nothing had worked for me until I'd made that decision. And it truly is an unfair advantage to the battles
so,
we have.
So what you're saying is bringing Jesus into you gives you more peace than either punching or getting punched in the face by somebody else. I mean, I find that's a strange concept there.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe you went to MMA and like, you know what, maybe I'll find peace there. Just beating the snot out of somebody.
Yeah, you know, MMA and jiu-jitsu for me was never like, I never aspired to be a professional fighter. It just kind of progressed because I competed in martial arts my whole life. But I really thought that was the answer when I came home. I was struggling. I had anxiety. I got on those wrestling mats and I couldn't think about Afghanistan. So I thought I found the answer, and it helped me to cope, but it never fixed the problem. And it just delayed the catastrophic fall that I had.
You have a very varied life. I mean, just being an MMA fighter or just being in, you know, Marine Recon, that's pretty intense. You know, Department of Defense, Air Marshal, suicidal. When you're looking at, you know, how many pages is this? 200? Yeah, 190. Not even that because of all the pictures in it. Yeah, about 190. How did you narrow it down to find what were the stories that you said this is a turning point that is relatable to others?
I just, you know, I have had a very blessed life to get to have tons of different experiences. And through those experiences, I've had some hardships. And, you know, but beyond those hardships, I found lessons forward. So I looked at stories in my life that were good antidotes for not only lessons or trials I faced in Afghanistan, in MMA, but they paralleled with other life issues that I had. And then the stories from the Bible and the wisdom that I've been given to be able to transcend those issues. And so I wanted to share things that had resonated with me as I started getting better. And
I know in my life I'm, you know, recovering alcoholic and, you know, suicide in my family and blah, blah, blah. I can give you a list of, you know, poor me. And those things really held me back because I allowed them to.
Right.
And then once I looked at them as, I hate to say a blessing, but the blessing, everything that happens to you, good or bad, there is no bad. It's what you deem and how you start using it. I've wondered, do you think truly great men can be truly great without significant trials?
No, you know, John Maxwell said it. He said, you know, God uses messed up people because there aren't any other kind. And right. And some of the most messed up people that I've seen coming out of the side of those things have been the most influential people in the world to help others. And, you know, do I wish I would have not had the hard road I had?
Sure.
Of course, you know, the people around me suffered the most. My wife, my children suffered the most. Yeah. So I wish I could take some of those things back. But the reason I do what I do at Mighty Oaks and isn't because of any kind of, because I was a recon Marine or because I was an MMA fighter, because of anything else other than the fact that I fell on my face. But I learned some lessons along the way and I'm able to share them with others.
So how do you share that with, How do you share that with a group of people who are being taught? I happen to like millennials. I think millennials are going to surprise everybody. I think they're an amazing group of people. There are, just like in every generation, a bunch of just idiots. But have you met my generation? But there are those millennials that are being taught that you deserve it, you have it, no pain, you don't have to work for it, all this, you know, somebody owes you. How do you take this message to people that aren't there? What do you say to them?
The message of entitlement and victimization is cancerous to any society, and including the veteran society. I mean, General Mattis spoke highly on this about, you know, veterans are better than this. But beyond our veterans, the world, like these millennials you're talking about, I think the really change comes when, and particularly with the people we work with, is when someone can accept responsibility. I mean, we deal with veterans that are coming to a program like ours, and they have every reason to say, hey, I'm in this situation because of this, because of something that happened in Iraq, Afghanistan. And we tell them, hey, just the opposite. Like, yeah, you faced something hard in Afghanistan, Iraq, your childhood, as tragic as that event may be, or even as heroic as it may be, the reason you're in this situation you're in isn't because of that incident. It's because of the choices you've made in response to that incident. And you never lose control of that. You always can have the power to choose. And when someone could come to that realization, take responsibility for not only the actions that are past, but their path forward and choose a different path forward, you know, that's when true change happens. That's when you're able to find successes in life and be able to overcome the hardships of life.
So I know I get something out of it, but talk to the person that should read your book. Why should they read it?
You know, it's everyone. I wrote the book specifically to men, and if you went even more specific to military men. But the reason I truly wrote the book was because when I go speak places, I always have the family member, the mom, the wife, the friend that says, hey, I have my friend is a Marine, and he would never come to this church and hear you speak, or he would never come to this event and hear you speak. What can I do to help him? Because he's tucked under a rock somewhere. And I say, well, here's our program. It's Mighty Oaks. It's free. You can send him. And they say, well, he would never go to anywhere like that. And so I wrote this book so someone could take the messages of it and either learn how to read it, learn how to identify to help them, or give it to them and be able to read it and be challenged enough to take responsibility.
So what is the stigma? Because I know with AA, as an alcoholic, I wasn't going to listen to some expert. I wasn't going to listen, you know, yeah, all right. Well, you've been here. Mm-hmm. But once you talk to somebody who's actually been there, they can speak the same. You just look in their eyes, you know they know, okay?
Yeah.
The same with service guys. You know, you're in the military. You're not going to listen to a clown like me. You're going to listen to somebody who's actually been there. With alcoholics, the stigma is, I'm not a drunk. What is the stigma with PTSD? Why do they close in their own shell and not reach out to another serviceman?
Because everyone thinks their situation is unique. You know, and that's probably one of the biggest obstacles that guys face when you talk about something like suicide. How do 20 guys per day end up in a place of hopelessness to where they stick a pistol in their mouth and pull the trigger? Is because they feel like there's no one that could connect with them. And that's one of the things that we end up being able to do because we are them. We're not a counselor. We're not their spouse. We're not their mom. We're able to come to them peer-to-peer and say, you know, hey, look, I know where you are, and maybe I don't have the exact same experience you have, but, you know, I know this road. And they are able to tell them something their counselor can't and challenge them and ask them the hard questions. You know, so the clinical counselors that are available to some of the military, and we bash the VA and all this stuff, but the truth is some of them are very qualified. It's the veteran that disqualifies them because of a sense of arrogance or entitlement or you don't know where I've been. But the truth is there's wisdom. As you open years, there's wisdom all over the place and principles that you can take to go forward. So we really have to be the ones peer-to-peer to crush those walls down and say, hey, you need to get help, and here's the different options to get help moving forward. Being in a program like we do at Mighty Oaks, peer-to-peer, we're able to do that and ask them those tough things.
Do you ever read anything about World War I and what happened to the guys in World War I and how traumatized they were?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, one of the things I hear a lot is, why is this generation, Afghanistan and Iraq, suffering more than World War I or World War II? And that's not true.
That's not true. Yeah. They just kept it to themselves and they didn't say anything. It was I think they felt shame on it, and I think the families felt shame on it because you don't talk about that. You brush that stuff back. The more I read about what happened, especially World War One, the guys came back and they were just, you know, they'd never seen, you know, Europe lost almost every horse because of tanks and gas and everything else. And they just, it was a different world to them. The book is An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. Chad is really a very wise, wise guy. If you know somebody that is struggling, or if it is you, I know this sounds weird, but you are not unique. It is amazing how much comfort you will find talking to somebody who's actually been there or reading the words. An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. Chad, thank you.
Thanks so much,
Glenn. We'll see you again. Thank you. Our sponsor this half hour is SimpliSafe. Believe it or not, people who are breaking into your house are just as afraid of you, or if you're in Texas, probably more afraid, than you are of them. They don't want to run into you. This is why most robberies happen in the middle of the day. But summer, it goes through the roof because they know you're gone. SimpliSafe Home Security has extended their biggest ever summer sale until the middle of this month, August 13th. It's $100 off SimpliSafe Summer Package. This is a special I've not seen before. I think it's $399 for the entire thing to secure your home. Plus, then you have about $15 a month. It's $14.99 for the round-the-clock monitoring with no long-term contract, nothing to lock you in. It's yours. Don't miss out. Sale ends August 13th. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Save $100 today. simplysafebeck.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so the Republicans have worked in Congress to bypass the president to shore up health care. The president has said that he is going to stop making payments to the health insurance companies to reimburse them for reducing the out-of-pocket medical expenses of low-income people. How does that possibly help? How does that possibly help? And now the Republicans are in a place to where they have to stand up. They didn't dismantle Obamacare. They had no intention. Now they are actually standing up to make sure that nobody touches Obamacare. That's how crazy this world is.
Shoring up the parts that are failing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bailout for Obamacare
that Republicans, instead of repealing it, they're now bailing it out. And they're bailing it out because the president said, I'm just going to stop spending the money, which would hurt the average person. Can somebody please start listening and working for the American people?
Don't.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.